Hello, welcome to the Lean on Plants podcast. My name is Chelsea, and if you are struggling to lose weight on a plant-based diet, then this podcast is for you. While there are thousands of books, podcasts, and resources about the benefits of a plant-based diet, the reality is that being vegan does not guarantee losing weight. If you are feeling frustrated and confused about where to start, or you know exactly what you should be doing, but you just can't seem to rustle up enough willpower to do it, then keep listening. In this podcast, you'll learn the truth about plant-based weight loss, but just as importantly, how to use proven methods of behavioral change to turn what you know into lifelong habits that lead to getting and staying lean. Can't wait to get started. Let's do this. Hello, hello. Welcome to the Lean with Plants podcast. Before we get started, if you were here last week when I said if I have not released a podcast by Monday, I will give every single person who messages me $100. I gotta tell you, the threat of that coming is getting me here to record a podcast on Sunday night at close to 8 p.m. because I don't have the resources for that, and it is so much proof that commitment devices, which is just essentially a creating something prior to when it counts, like prior to the moment, that is going to force your behavior because it's so painful to not follow through, or you've created something where you just have to follow through. And they really, really work. So it's got me thinking about that a lot. And I just love to see how I can use behavioral change tools like that in my own life. One of the behavioral change tools that I've seen, or maybe not even tools, is something that I really didn't know about or have a lot of understanding of until probably the last 6 months. Because as most of you know, if you're a regular listener, the program that I run, Lean with Plants, we've changed the way that we do that. And we went from being pretty much a DIY course with a ton of information and then some levels of accountability with our progress pods and accountability groups, which are amazing, and live Q&As and things like that, to switching to a coaching program. What I really should say is, rather than a coaching program, is a transformation program where we've got all of these little elements and little things that we know if someone is to do this on a consistent basis, then they will transform and change their life. Like, these are things we know work. The data speaks for itself. Things like eating your vegetables every day, prioritizing a pound to 2 pounds of vegetables every day. That alone is a habit. If you were to implement that, you would see results over the next year when you are 365 pounds of veggies down. Having some form of accountability where someone else is looking in and checking in with you and seeing what you're doing is another huge part of this, so that you are not an island in that you have someone else to report to. Essentially, it's the reason that we have people like personal trainers and mentors and coaches and all these different things, is that if your coach, and you say to your coach, hey, I'm going to be at the gym at 6 a.m. or your personal trainer, you're not going to flake out on them, most likely. Like, it's going to be very, very difficult to do that. So that's why we added this accountability piece. But the coolest thing for me has been that over the last 6 months, we've been able to observe a lot of character traits and a lot of behavioral patterns in the people that we work with, to the point now, which I talked about in the last two episodes, where I can have a conversation with someone and see just from the right way that they're responding to me how likely they are to succeed long term. And one of the fascinating things, like, there's a whole lot which I talked about in the last two episodes, which is the character traits of successful dieters. But what I really wanted to talk about is how winners think differently. Because I've noticed in our own program, and I've noticed through meeting a lot of people I would consider winners, people who are successful in their fields, people who are up and getters, people who make significantly more progress than others. Let's say that that's what we're going to define as winning. I don't think winning means that you're beating anyone else. I just think that it means that you make significant progress on a shorter timeline than anyone because you have a set of skills, a set of behaviors, and some habits that allow you to progress quickly and to avoid the common mistakes that other people will really set other people back. And I've observed this one thing that winners think and winners believe and winners do, that if someone does not do this naturally, or they have not developed the mental muscle of or the practice of this thing, then until they cultivate and do that, it's very unlikely that they will see long-term success. In the same vein, the people that have this and they think this way will see far better results, even if their circumstances are worse and their initial progress is not as impressive. Like, that's how impactful this thing is, to the point where it's challenged me so much to change my own behavior, because I want to be a winner. I want to be someone that goes out there and actually makes consistent progress, because that's what impacts others. That's what helps me live my life to the fullest. That's what challenges me and allows me to have fun and work with an amazing team and people and change lives. And I want to have this thing. So wherever you're listening, I'd love for you to just put up your hand and say, hey, whatever this is, if this has been shown to help people be successful, I want it. Like, I'm sure we all want to know, what are the ways that winners think? And I touched on it briefly last week, but I wanted to do a deep dive because we did an exercise in this a couple of days ago within the Lean to Plants community. We did a live Q&A and we went through some role playing of the scenarios around this, and it was extremely powerful. So I wanted to bring it to you as well. So we're going to talk about optimism, we're going to talk about positivity, and we're going to talk about how winners have created thought patterns and behaviors around these ways, or this way of operating, that is inherently positive. And the reason this matters so much is that most of us come from a bit of a victim mindset. We see roadblocks, we see obstacles, we're hard on ourselves, we get down on ourselves when we feel like we should have done more or we haven't made enough progress in a certain amount of time. A lot of times we will disregard the wins that we have because they're not enough, and we constantly feel like we're failing. Not only is that just frustrating and painful to live with, it's also incredibly detrimental to being able to make progress and to become a winner. And this identity that we can cultivate of being an optimist and being a positive person and choosing that, that's something that anyone can do. You don't have to be born to it. You can be the most negative, cynical, terrible view on the world, hard on yourself person right now, and there are things that you can do that are going to move you into becoming more optimistic and positive. And we're going to go over practically what those are. Before we do that, I want to talk about why this matters and how to actually start cultivating positivity. So I used to think that this was a very woo topic. I used to think that just having like a positive attitude was similar to things like the law of attraction, which I'm going to be completely honest with you, I just don't believe to be true. I think good things happen to bad people. I think bad things happen to good people. I think thinking about something is not going to make it happen. In saying that, optimism and seeing open doors allows us to take action, and it allows us to problem solve. And when we take action and problem solve, then we can actually get results and we can learn quickly. We're not manifesting a reality. We're just giving ourselves permission, or we're seeing possibilities and therefore we act on them. And that's really the action that gets us those results. We have to pick up our forks and eat a broccoli. We can't just think about being skinny and then it happens. But if you hate vegetables right now and the thought of eating a broccoli is like the worst torture and you feel like Kevin from the office where that broccoli is being like forced into his mouth and he's gagging and it's awful and hilarious all at the same time. If that feels like you and you just think, you know, I'm never ever going to like vegetables, then that lack of optimism or that pessimism, that viewpoint where you do not see the possibility of change is going to mean that it's very hard for you to change. So it's not about believing something and then it happens. It's about the possibility being the first step to you taking action towards actually changing. I think this is the most important piece about optimism. And this is the first point I've written in my notes, is that if we are going to be able to problem solve, then we have to see opportunities. And there's this phrase that I love, which is, pessimists see closed doors, optimists see open doors, and if they're closed, they'll knock them down. And it's this idea that we have the ability to find solutions. Because if we can find solutions, and if there are solutions, then we can progress and we can grow and we can learn and we can change. If we come up against closed doors all the time and we don't have the ability to knock them down or go around or dig a hole or jump or find another door or find someone who has the key, then we're stopped and we're stuck there. And then we don't take any steps to actually make progress because we don't see that as possible. And there's no point actually taking a step forward, taking any kind of action, if you are convinced that it won't be helpful. The practical outworking of optimism is action taking, or it can be. There's a lot of people that are optimistic where they don't have to make any changes and everything's going to stay the same, but somehow their situation doesn't. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about seeing an opportunity and then actually taking action on it. So the logical, practical outworking of optimism is action taking. And because action taking is really the only thing that gets us results, then that's really what we need to cultivate, or we need to cultivate that environment so that we can actually take action. And optimists, when it comes to taking action, they see more positive outcomes for the action that they take. Therefore, it's less scary, so they're more likely to take risks. Let's make this really practical. You know that you're going to have to go to a restaurant. There's not going to be vegan food. There's not going to be oil-free food or anything that's going to be helpful for you on a weight loss journey. Typical scenario, there's chips. You're also going to be with a whole group of people who possibly are going to think that you're weird. If we're going to take this idea from two different types of people, one of them tends to be more optimistic, the other one tends to be more pessimistic. The pessimist is going to be concerned about the possibility that the people they go with are going to think that they're weird, that the restaurant is going to see them as an inconvenience, that their whole experience is going to be ruined. It's not going to be as good as what it was, and their whole night is going to be a waste of time and uncomfortable and embarrassing, and they're most likely just going to go and eat things off plan anyway, so why would they plan? Like, that's a worst case scenario, but if you've not ever been proactive in those situations, then you've probably got a lot of pessimism. We can change that. We'll get to it. Contrast that with someone who is more optimistic. They see open doors rather than roadblocks. They see positive possibilities. They're looking at it, well, my friends might actually be interested, or they'll be neutral about it. The restaurant is going to be happy to accommodate. If they're not, I'll find another way. Maybe I can bring food with me that they won't mind. What if I rung up beforehand and they had other options? They happen to have the ability to cook up a baked potato. I'm going to go and we're going to have amazing conversations, and it's going to be just as good, and I'm going to find myself coming home, staying on plan, and I'm going to actually make progress in that area. Can you see that how, depending on how you see that situation, is going to open up the actions that you take or the inactions? And I observed this so strongly when I went to GymCon recently, which is an event put on for gym owners. I learned a lot at that. It was a wonderful event put on by a group called, or a company called Gym Launch, who I have a lot of respect for. Very, very, just fantastic people. Over-delivered, extremely positive, action takers. And so I was in a room with about 600 people in the fitness and gym space, which I am not, but I'm in a transformation space, which is, it's essentially the same kind of thing, trying to get our clients to see the best results they can for the least amount of effort. And that was the thrust of the event, as you will. And I learned so much from the conversations that I had between the speakers that were on stage. And I realized that the highly successful gym owners were just taking a lot of action. They didn't use the word hard. They didn't make excuses. They saw possibilities. When I would talk to them and I would say, like, hey, like, what do you think about that? They're like, yeah, like, that could work. What about this? What about this? Or this is what I did. Whereas when I would talk to people who seemed like they could have been so much further ahead, the predominant word that I heard coming out of their mouths was, it's hard. And they would make excuses about why they hadn't taken action because of the potentially negative effects of it. The potentially negative effects of it was going to be uncomfortable. There was going to be backlash. There was going to be staff that didn't like it. There was going to be difficulty in training people in terms of delegation. And so what it meant was that the winners were moving forward fast. They weren't really, really intelligent people. Like, I'm sure they're really, like, they're smart enough. But it wasn't like this huge difference in terms of the people that were winning and then the people that weren't. It was just that the people who were not using hard as an excuse, and they were inherently optimistic. They took a lot more action than everyone else. I think that's the thing I took away most from my entire 3 days at this phenomenal conference, was that action takers see opportunities, and that people who are not in that category make excuses. And if you'd asked me 2 years ago to talk on this topic and how optimism relates to weight loss, I probably wouldn't have had an opinion, or I would have thought, like I said, there was like a really kind of woo thing. But as I've started to see this more and more, there's so much logic around it, because when you think about it, you cannot make progress if you cannot see that there are possibilities to change. Like, how can you change if you don't see the opportunity that that's even possible? You're not going to do anything that leads you in that direction. The other character trait that comes with cultivating optimism is choosing to see the world from a grateful lens as opposed to a negative lens. And I've seen this so much with people in our program who are inherently, or they've cultivated it most likely, they choose gratefulness. They're grateful for the wins that they've experienced. They talk about their experience in the light of things that are going well, of the changes and the positive things that are happening. They're grateful for the opportunities that they have. I was talking to someone the other day, and this was actually in our live, and they were talking about their gym. They've got the opportunity to go to a pretty cool gym, and they were talking about how grateful they were that they get to go to this gym. Whereas a lot of people will talk about how hard it is to go to the gym, how frustrating it is that they have to work out, that they have to eat healthy when other people don't, that they have to deprive themselves, they feel deprived. When in reality, if we were to approach everything that we do and we were to ask ourselves, hey, how can I be grateful in this situation, rather than being sad and pessimistic and seeing all the negatives, we'd see so many positive. We'd be like, wow, I know how to eat healthy. How cool is that? Wow, I get to buy vegetables. So many people throughout history have died of things like scurvy and preventable vitamin deficiencies. It's still happening in the developing world. People are still dying of deficiencies from simply not having enough vegetables, to the point where there is genetically modified rice that has beta carotene added. Like it's golden rice that adds some kind of element to try to mitigate the fact that a lot of the world does not get enough of the right kind of nutrients. Like how crazy is that to try and fix that? So when we approach our lives with gratefulness, we're so much more likely to make more progress as well, because we're looking at it through the lens of, hey, like, look at this wonderful thing. I'm more motivated to make more progress. I'm more motivated. I'm more joyful. I've got more momentum. Like, all of these positive things make it so much easier for us to keep going. If we're down in the doldrums about everything, it's so hard to pull yourself out of that. So I've talked about why this is important. I want to talk about actually creating this as a practice and how to become a more optimistic person. I've written down about 4 or 5 things, but it starts with acknowledging and understanding where negativity and positivity come from, and that it is simply a lens in which we see our lives. That the situation can stay the same, and depending on how you see it, you're going to be absolutely thrilled or you're going to be absolutely disgusted with it. There's this really interesting idea in product development, marketing, everything really, which is if you have an expectation and your expectation is exceeded, therefore like you this is your goalpost. Your expectation is your goalpost essentially. Once it's exceeded, you're surprised and you're delighted. So if you want to give, for example, a customer a really amazing experience and you over-deliver, then if it's better than the experience, that's surprise and delight. Like that's what you really want to cultivate if you have a business. It's the same kind of thing if you're planning a party or if you're doing whatever. You show up to the gym and you had this expectation that the workout was going to be easy and everyone there was going to be friendly, and then it wasn't, then you're not going to have surprise and delight. You're going to have the opposite, which is disappointment, because something did not meet your expectations. So really the way that you feel about something is mostly to do but where you've put that goalpost, where you've set your expectations. So it's not about necessarily setting your expectations lower, but it's about allowing yourself to go into things with less expectations. They're not lower, they're just less. You've got less in general. You're going in curious, as opposed to something having to be the way that it is. You're seeing possibility and you're going in with childlike curiosity as opposed to something has to be this way. And really that's a wonderful trait of being able to learn as well, because most of the solutions that we have in life come from a position of being curious and asking good questions. There's no like right for every situation answer, which is a reason that I'm not a huge fan of the modern day school system. My kids are in school, but I don't like that we have this kind of divergent thinking, this wonderful ability to see multiple answers to the same problem. You ask a kid, what do I do with a stone? And they will give you any answer ranging from like build a house to put it in a shoe of your enemy so that it wears a hole in their foot and then that enemy can't run very far. Like that is something my daughter has said to me when we've played this game. But we lose that as adults because we're constantly trying to find the right way. Instead of getting curious and saying, what's working? What's not? What could I try? What could I do? And so if we allow ourselves to remove some of that expectation and instead come at it from this viewpoint that nothing is given. Like nothing is meant to be easy. Nothing has to be negative if it's hard. Like this is a huge one. What if we just removed hard as an excuse, or we allowed that to be neutral? Like why are we putting so many negative connotations around the word hard? I want to challenge you. This is something I've done for my own life. It's something that my team does as well. See the word hard in the same neutrality that you would purple. Because if we are to look at something that is, it doesn't matter if it's hard or it's easy, then we're not going to use that as something that we get pessimistic about. Now here's an example of that. You have to say no. You're driving past the burger joint that you love. Fully vegan, drive-through, Project Pollo material. Oh, Texas, I miss Project Pollo. Fully vegan, Chick-fil-A alternative. Anyway, you're driving past and you're thinking, oh my gosh, it's so hard to not just drive in there and get the milkshake and the loaded fries. It's so hard, poor me. And you're feeling negative and you're feeling defeated and you're feeling deprived and you're feeling like, why is this so hard? This sucks. And then what if we removed hard being negative? What if we removed expectation, because it's all about expectation, and we saw that with a lot more neutrality and we're like, huh, yeah, this feels uncomfortable. This feels difficult. Wow. Like, I'm going to choose to be grateful that I'm working this muscle of becoming someone who can do hard things. Like, as I'm driving past here, saying no, like, wow, like, I have the opportunity to say no. I have the opportunity to become the kind of person who can do that. Or even just approaching it with neutrality, like, oh, this feels terrible. This sucks. I don't like this. I'm uncomfortable. I feel deprived. It's hard. Okay, move on. So what? It's hard. Yeah, life is hard. We all know this now. We're all dealing with things. Nick was telling me the other day about a family where three of their kids, they're all under about 8 years old, have been diagnosed with childhood dementia. It's some kind of gene that the parents both have. They've passed it on to all of their children. So they now have a seven-year-old and an eight-year-old, or however old their kids are, that are now forgetting things like people do in their 80s. There's no rhyme or reason to that. That's incredibly difficult. That's incredibly hard. We know that. You've got difficult things. I've got difficult things. What if we just stopped having that as the goalpost in terms of it has to be easy for it to be positive? What if it didn't have to be easy for it to be positive? What if it could be difficult and it could still be positive? I believe that that's possible. And I believe that that's a lens that we choose to see life with. I had this conversation with my daughter the other day because something helps me, because as most of you know, there's a lot of difficult things in our life as a family. My husband Nick has multiple sclerosis. It's a degenerative condition, and it's hard to watch him progress in that. It's incredibly difficult for him. The uncertainty that we have about our lives, the way that affects us, not just him having a disability, but also having something that there's no end in sight. There's no prognosis of that slowing down or stopping. We don't know what the next 10 years looks like. That's incredibly difficult. It's incredibly difficult to live with that and to remain positive. But when I get these feelings of hopelessness, I remind myself that I have a lot of chemical reactions happening in my brain. I have a lot of things going on when I feel incredibly emotional, when I feel hopeless, that just because I feel that way, it doesn't mean that the situation itself has changed. It just means the way that I see it in that moment is colored by my emotions. It's the same way that we know that when it's dark, when the sun is not around, that the world is still the same, but it feels drastically different in the dark. Our perception has changed, the world has not. And the same is true with your emotions, or with the way that you view things, negatively, positively, with gratefulness, or just whatever way you see it. If you're incredibly emotional, if you're having a day where you're like, I really cannot cope, I cannot get out of bed, if that feels like it's because of the situation or because of the circumstance, most of the time, for most of us, the circumstance or the situation has not changed all that much. Just our perception of it has changed. Like, when I'm upset and I'm thinking about the future, and I think back to the times when I was laughing and happy with Nick, like, that future was still the same. Like, what will be is going to be. Like, we're going to carry on. We're going to do our best regardless. I just feel differently about it in this moment. But I know there will be times when I feel fine and I'm not worried. I know that that's the case. So I've got to look at this with a whole lot more logic than what I am right now. So my daughter the other day I set some boundaries for her. She wasn't happy about it. And she's a wonderfully dramatic person. She's a very sensitive person, which I love. And she was literally wringing her hands like you would hear about in a Dickens book. She's literally like hands in the air. Picture an 8-year-old, hands in the air, eyes screwed up tight, tears streaming down her face, saying, "God, please show me a sign. Show me a sign." Because she felt so strongly, like, I know it sounds crazy, but this is our family, we're dramatic. She felt so strongly that I didn't love her because I'd put boundaries in place. And I went and gave her a hug as she was brushing her teeth in the bathroom. And I'm a whole lot taller than her. So I gave her a gentle hug, like around the top of her shoulders. And her response to me was, "Why are you trying to strangle me?" Whereas if I had given her that same kind of hug 10 minutes earlier when she didn't feel chided, her response would have been like, "Oh, Mom, I love you." And so we sat down and we had a conversation. And I was saying to her about the chemicals in your brain. And I was like, "Riley, it's almost like when you put sunglasses on. How you feel about the world, or the way that the world actually is, doesn't change when you put the glasses on. It just looks different. It's darker now. When you take it off, it's brighter. The world doesn't change, your perception has. So right now, I do love you. You may not feel it, but you know I love you. You may feel like it's the end of the world. You may feel like your heart is breaking. But if we look at this logically, like, that's a choice to continue to keep these glasses on. And only you can change that. And if you want to take the glasses off, then there are some practical things that you can do to help yourself feel better. But it starts with realizing that that's a choice to keep them on if we don't go through these exercises. And she came to the point where she was like, "Mom, I'm going to take these glasses off." And she put the smile on her face and she changed her whole perspective in an instant. And I think there's this, I wouldn't say toxic, but there's this idea around that, like, false positivity is so negative. And I'm not talking about having false positivity. I'm not talking about not acknowledging the difficulties in your life. I'm not saying that life is not difficult. What I'm trying to say here is that when we approach things with an understanding that how we feel does not change the situation. And then here's the thing, like, even if you feel like overwhelmingly positive about your future, or you feel absolutely worried about all the contingencies, what's really going to change that, if you do have agency to change it, is going to be the actions that you take. So you may as well choose to be more optimistic, to make actions happen that are going to help you get where you want to be, rather than being negative, because you can't plan for the worst case scenario anyway. You can't plan that 3 of your kids are going to get diagnosed with early onset dementia. Like, no one plans that in their future. So cultivating gratefulness and this idea of choosing to see where things are logical, being data-driven rather than emotional, or being at least driven by your emotionals, that's going to be the path that helps you most. Once you recognize that emotionals are chemicals in your brain, they're not the absolute truth, then one of the ways that you can feel better in the moment is to acknowledge and share wins and progress. This is a big part of the culture that we have in Lean of Plants, because we've seen how helpful it is. So whenever you have a win, writing that down. Whenever you make progress, having some way of acknowledging it. And to the point now with our own clients, and if you're part of our program, and if you're part of the Lean of Plants fam, then I really encourage you to do this, is that when we share, we ask for how your week went, share a win. Talk about a win. Find one thing, even if it's small, that you can say and celebrate as a win. Because the more you do that, the more that we acknowledge our ability to make progress, the more motivated we are to make more. And this is actually talked about in Essentialism from Greg McKeown, is that the most motivating thing for humanity is to see progress and to have it acknowledged by others. That's not woo. It's not airy-fairy. It's something incredibly practical. Practically, what I do is I write stuff down on post-it notes. If I'm feeling really negative about things, if I'm not acknowledging my wins, I get out my journal and I write down what they are. I was talking to Nick the other day and I was thinking about a situation. I was thinking about some of the problems that we're trying to overcome, because there's always problems in terms of running a program or a business, in terms of becoming a better person and growing and growth and all these things. And I was like, hey, Nick, so there's this. I'm feeling down about it. And then I caught myself and I'm like, hey, no, I'm gonna acknowledge the wins within this. That I am so grateful and so much further ahead because I have these problems now. Like, it's big girl problems that I have now. So if you are like, let's put this onto weight loss, because that's ultimately why we're here, right? If you've lost 40 pounds and you've hit a plateau, you've now got big girl problems because you've lost 40 pounds. Like, flipping heck, you've lost 40 pounds. Amazing. So the way that you see that and you approach that with acknowledgement of wins and progress is going to drastically change the way that you see your ability to make more. And you think about those two scenarios. The first person, the optimist, goes, oh my gosh, I've lost 40 flipping pounds. That takes a significant amount of time. I'm in a plateau right now. Like, how cool is it that I've gotten to this point where I now have to tweak my diet because I've lost that much weight? The pessimist goes, I'm so frustrated that I'm in a plateau, without acknowledging that win. Like, that's a choice. So sharing wins and progress is going to help you to make more. The next thing is to express what you are grateful for, because gratefulness allows us to become more optimistic, and it helps us to see the positives and the things that, it helps us to see possibilities. It just generally makes our life happier as well. And if we're happier, if we're not frustrated, if we're enjoying things, if we're joyful, then what's the chance that we're going to continue that on? Pretty high, I would say. And a story that's close to home on this is, so Nick's been having some trouble with his eyes. He got glasses and we thought that some things were corrected, because MS affects your nerves. And he's been having more troubles with his eyes over the last few months. And he went and had some testing done, because he's really struggling right now. And basically they said, you need to go have another MRI and you need to talk to your neurologist, because there looks like there's some serious damage in the nerve in one of his eyes. And he came home and told me this. That, again, like, that's hard stuff. And my instant response was like just this welling of emotion inside of like, this is too much. Like, this is too hard. I can't do this. And Nick, to his credit, to his absolute, I don't even know what the word would be. Like, I'm just so inspired by his response. And he said, but my other eye is fine. My other eye seems to be totally fine. That he made the choice in that moment. And no one's going to say that that's like an easy choice. That that's just, oh yeah, he could just do that because whatever, that's just who he is. That's a choice that he's had to grow and cultivate. He puts in so much effort to do that. The fact that you can say that in that moment shows so much mental strength, and it shows a practice of doing that time and time and time again. That is not a natural and inherent thing. Children do not do that. Children do not naturally express gratefulness when someone else has got something, a present, and then they didn't get the exact same thing that they think is fair. You see it all the time. They have a very, very strong sense of injustice. And we do the same. And we have to, at some point, if we really want to be winners, then at some point we've got to be the ones that are grateful for the eye that we do have that is working fine. Because what's the alternative? Like, seriously. I want you to sit and ask this for yourself, even if you have to pause this episode right now. Whatever you are going through, whatever it is, PCOS, trying to lose weight while breastfeeding, going through menopause, whatever the heck it is, living in a food desert, what is the alternative to you being optimistic and positive? If you want to get to a goal, what is the alternative? You wallow in self-pity? You wait around for someone else to come and save you? That's not going to happen. You lay in your bed and pity eat chips while watching Netflix? You tell everyone around you that it's difficult? We know damn well it's difficult. Like, in a lot of ways, the people who have gotten the results that you want, like, if you're saying, hey, like, this is really, really difficult to someone who's actually been there first, they know that more than you because they've done it longer than you. They had to get the result. And coming back to this idea of it's not diminishing the hard, it's just recognizing that in order to be a winner, which I like to think of as a hero, heroes do difficult things all the time. The reason that we love them is that they get up again when there's no one else and they keep fighting. The heroes are like Frodo and Sam, who don't want to be taking the ring to Mordor, but they're doing it anyway. For the good of mankind, for the good of Middle Earth, that they're sacrificing. And no one goes, well, because they did it, it was must have been easy for them. No, it was so difficult. It cost them everything, but they did it anyway. And we get a choice in how we view ourselves and our lives and what we put our focus and our energy towards, be that optimism that we can be that hero and that we're going to do hard things and that we are capable of change and we are capable of going through the battle and coming out the other side, or at least going as far as we can, or we get to choose to be the victim. Only you can make that choice, but that choice changes everything. But here's the thing, you have to make that on a daily basis. That has to become a practice. And so this is where these really practical things like acknowledging and sharing wins becomes huge, because it's the practical proof that you are changing and becoming this optimistic person, this hero that is going to do difficult things to get to the result that they want, to win the prize. And part of this is being very, very disciplined about not falling into victim speaking. I feel like there's a much, much better way of saying this. Victim lingo, the way that victims speak, this is a huge thing that I see, is that heroes and positive people, optimistic people, are very disciplined in not being a victim, not victimizing themselves. And again, this is a choice. This is the hard one. I think this is the most difficult, because anyone can express gratefulness. It's really difficult to actually hold your tongue when you want to be saying like, oh, like this is really, really difficult for me. I feel really frustrated. And I have to, I'm trying to cultivate a lot of discipline around this, because I know how powerful it is, because we've seen it over the last 6 months, like I've said. And so it's challenged me to reframe how I talk about my problems. And so I'll share a story with you. I shared a few months back that I had started taking some medication for like anxiety and depression, and it was really, really helping me. And one of the side effects was that I had a drastic loss of appetite, and that caused me to lose some weight because I didn't really feel like eating. And I knew logically that once I came off the medication, it would be very likely that I would gain the weight back, because I would simply have a higher appetite. And when I was in America for 5 weeks, I was also in Costa Rica, I was doing a lot of skating, I was doing a lot of walking, a lot of movement. I was eating microwave potatoes, a lot of like cherry tomatoes and salad stuff, because those foods were very, very plentiful, it was very easy. And so those two things, more movement, healthier kind of environment, I was eating some processed food as well, but lack of appetite meant that when I got home from my trip, like I was really the leanest that I've been in a long time. I was like lean, tan, a couple of new tattoos. I was feeling myself. Like I was feeling good. I was feeling really, really confident. And then since being home, but here's the other thing as well, is that my habits that got me there were nothing disciplined that got me there. It was happenstance. It was environment. It was the fact that I was moving more and eating less. It wasn't a choice. It just was the way that it ended up. And so when I got back, I was pretty lax. Like I was eating dessert every night. And I was also way hungrier because I had stopped taking the medication about 2 weeks prior, which is awesome. Like how cool that I'm in that space now that I'm like, yeah, I can go off this. And my appetite is way more. I mean, I wasn't moving much. I have not been moving much since being home. And so I gained weight. I gained weight since being home. And it's not a lot. Like it's within my normal kind of fluctuations. I fluctuate about, 4 pounds No, it's going to be more than... Yeah, about 4 to 5 pounds is kind of where I sit in terms of my maintenance. But I definitely prefer being on the leaner end of the spectrum. And I was lying in bed one night and I was like, oh, man, I'm frustrated myself. Like, I'm really honest about this. Like, I do see the logic of it. I do see that it was just a normal response to a change in environment, a change in situation. I get that. But my emotions and the way that I really feel about this is just annoyed. I feel frustrated. I feel like I let myself down and I'm just like, oh, like I wish I could go back to that. And like, why did I this? Why? God, show me a sign. Like, really. Anyway, and then I caught myself. I was like, no, heroes don't talk like that. I'm going to have discipline in how I speak about this. I'm going to not be a victim in this situation because I made choices. And again, if I'm going to be data-driven rather than emotionally driven, then I can see that this is a really logical thing that happened. So I flipped it and I changed that and I chose to be disciplined. I was like, you know what? This is the way that things are. This is a normal response. It does not mean that I'm a failure. I'm literally talking to myself, lying in bed. Charles, you are not a failure because you gained a tiny bit of weight. You were not some kind of amazing hero because you lost that last little bit in the first place. You just happened to have less of an appetite because you had some other crap going on, all right? And you were moving more. So learn from this. What are you going to do now? You cannot change the past. You can be grateful for what you have because you've literally woken up in a body that you would have dreamed about 5-6 years ago. You would have dreamed about it. And now because the goalpost has moved, you're upset. Please. Like, come on, please. Like, slap to the face. Pull yourself together. So I feel like Edna. Pull yourself together. And I had to choose not to be a victim. This one's been incredibly difficult, but I think it's one of the most powerful. And you'll see it in yourself when you notice it and how you speak. And the thing that's going to be most difficult is that you're going to want other people to acknowledge the struggle. You're going to want to be justified in how difficult things are. You're going to want other people to recognize that things are tough. And that's what's really going to hold it back, because what we feel like is that if we don't speak out about the struggles that we're experiencing, that they're diminishing. And that's not true. That is simply not true, because when we look at the hero's story, we can see that the heroes, like the fact that they didn't complain about everything they went through did not diminish their struggle. It actually enhanced how great they were. It showed us more about their character that they didn't complain. And so we've got to ask ourselves is who do we want to be? Do we want to be a Samwise Gamgee? Do we want to be a Captain America? Do we want to be Nicholas Nickleby? Insert favorite hero here, Shrek, whoever. Like, do we want to be that person or do we want to be the victor/villain? Like, that's a choice. And the hero is the one that holds those things. They see them logically and they do not fall into the very satisfying and tantalizing temptation of speaking like a victim. The final thing I want to talk about is that optimists inherently solve problems. And they look for ways to solve problems because they see that there is opportunities. And the cool thing here is if you want to cultivate this, and we talked about they see open doors, and they don't just see one door. They might just see that they don't need a door. They might be like, well, you know what, I just need a key, or I just need a battering ram, or I'm just going to walk around the door, or I'm going to find another way. So they're constantly looking for different ways to solve the same problem. The coolest thing here is to think of it the same way that if you were a writer, or a marketer, or someone in business. And really what works incredibly well is to just generate a ton of ideas. They do not have to be correct, because it's volume that counts. And this is where divergent thinking comes in, because divergent thinking is all about using many, many different ways to solve the same problem, rather than having to ask, well, what's right or wrong? So divergent thinking is more about possibilities than it is about this kind of binary idea that things are black and white. And when you really, really think about this, weight loss is the most important part, or not so much the most important part, but we're going to need a whole lot of divergent thinking if we're going to solve the specific struggles for our situation. Because I can tell you exactly what I eat in a day. I can tell you the ways that things work for me. But as soon as I say, you know, my husband's on board with this, like he eats what I eat, then if your initial response is, oh, well, you're so lucky my husband wouldn't, then you've put a roadblock up for yourself rather than asking yourself, well, how could I solve my specific problem? You're putting a situation or you're saying, well, because that is not the same as this and this person is working for them, but their situation is different, then I can't be successful. So rather than trying to figure out, well, what's right and wrong, try and generate ideas for yourself. So if that's the example, what else could you do? What else is possible? If you had 50 things that you could write down to solve the same problem, they do not have to be right or wrong. And if you allow yourself to do that, then you're much more likely to actually get to something that is going to work rather than waiting around for someone else to save you, because the hero has to do that. The hero has to go, well, is there another way? Well, could I do this? Could I talk to this person? Could we use this instrument? Well, what if we fought this way? My daughter came to me the other day, Morgan's story. She was going on a school trip and she has lost her drink bottle, her water bottle. And she came the night before and she was like, she was all forlorn. She's like, I don't have a drink bottle, so I suppose I can't go. I was like, man, this little kid, she's such a victim right now. I'm going to help her to see differently. Like, let's see if we can do a little exercise. So I was like, okay, so what does the school say that you need? I need clothes. I need a drink bottle. I need my lunch. I was like, okay, cool. So what would a problem solver do? It's like, well, I just need a drink bottle. I'm like, okay, so who has a drink bottle? Well, daddy has a drink bottle. Okay, so what would a problem solver, this is the question I always ask my kids, what would a problem solver do or say? Well, I could ask daddy if I could use his drink bottle. And I was like, yeah, like that's honest. That's, yeah, you could do that. All right, what else? What else could you do? Because I just wanted her to generate ideas. I wanted her to be a problem solver. I wanted her to be a victor, not a victim, a hero. She's like, well, I could, she went to the cupboard, like, oh, I could use this sippy cup and put water in there. I was like, yeah, you totally could do that. I could use a cup of water and carry it. I was like, yeah, okay. Because we're just generating ideas. It's not right or wrong. I'm not going to shoot anything down. Pulls out the soap dispenser. I could put water in this and drink soap. And I was like, okay, yeah, you totally could. Because the thing is, she could. Like, she realistically could. It's not a good idea. But she could do it. And she was generating ideas in order to solve problems. And I think what happens for a lot of women is that because we've been told what to do a lot of our lives, or we've given into this idea that if we don't act a certain way that we're going to be judged, or we're going to be left alone, or we're going to be unliked, we're going to be abandoned, like really deep stuff. And if we take up space, then no one's going to like and respect us. And so there's all these ways of operating that we've closed doors to. And we never even think to look at them as open doors because we've closed them so many years ago. I want to pull back this analogy of if my spouse doesn't eat the same way as me, or my spouse eats meat, or whatever it is. If you were to think about all the ways that you could solve that, like there are crazy things in that. Like there are crazy things, like you could leave. I'm not saying do it. Please hear me out on this. You could take a class on cooking and then become such an amazing cook that no matter what you cooked, they loved it, you loved it. You could get that person to cook one night a week, or you could propose that idea. You could buy takeout for them and you eat whatever. You could buy pre-made meals for them and then you eat the meals that you want to eat. You could get your teenagers to cook if you have teenagers. You could whatever. Like, there's so many things that you could do. There's like a million different things. There's a lot of them that would be negative. There's a lot of them that would be positive. But the whole point is this, is if there's any resistance to any of those things, oh no, I couldn't do that. That's a victim speaking, because you actually could. It's a choice not to. And it sounds like it's so silly, because it's like, well, if I'm going to choose not to, then I couldn't. But it's really important to understand that those two things are different. If you couldn't do something, It means you have a physical limitation to being able to do it. If you are locked in a room and you can't escape, you can't escape. If you are saying that you have to cook meat for someone, you don't. You could make a choice to not cook at all. You could make a choice to go on holiday to Costa Rica for 3 weeks. You could make a choice to whatever. Those are not positive choices for your marriage. Please do not make them. But you could do them. And it hit me. Like this, the thinking about this differently really hit me because, and it's helped me to see things really from an empowered position rather than a victim position. And I remember there was one distinct night. I remember it so clearly. I was walking around outside our house. I was on the footpath, and I was calling my mum. And there was some really hard stuff going on with Nick's diagnosis. And I was like, "Mum, I can't do this." I was sobbing, like, "I can't do this. This is too hard. I can't do it." I think she may have even said, like, she's a brave woman, but she may have even said, she's like, "Well, like you just got to choose what you want to do. Well, you got to choose what you're gonna do. It's your choice." I was like, "No, like I have to do this. Like it's, but I can't do this." And I'm like, she's like, "You can choose whatever you want to do." And I realized that I could choose to go. I could choose to leave. There was nothing that was stopping me doing that except the commitments that I'd made and the fact that my kids' lives would be screwed up. My husband's life would be screwed up. It would be incredibly selfish and I would not be happy. But as I was going through that in my head, I was realizing, well, that's a choice that I make for myself. The fact that that would not be something I would want to do means that I'm making a choice to stay. It's not that I can't go. It's that I'm choosing not to. It's not that I'm stuck. It's that I'm making a choice to be planted. And that's a very, very different way of looking at things. So now when things are difficult, that helps me because it's an empowered choice rather than a victim choice. Because a victim doesn't have options. They're waiting to be saved. And if no one's coming, they're screwed. Whereas the hero goes, "I'm going to keep fighting. No one's forcing me to be here. I volunteered. I volunteer as tribute." If you're a Hunger Games fan, like that's what it is. Like no one, like, yes, there was people that were forced into the arena, but there was also people that volunteered. And really what we're doing with our lives is, unless someone's got a gun to our head, we're volunteering with our choices. And we're just choosing to own the either negative or positive consequences to those outcomes. So we can make a choice right here and right now to acknowledge and share our wins and progress, express gratefulness and choose gratefulness, to be disciplined about not speaking like a victim and instead speaking like how a hero would, to look for ways to solve problems, to divergently think, and to recognize that emotions are really a whole lot of chemical reactions happening in our brain, and that they are not data. So when we say that we're frustrated about the scales being the same for 3 days, when we know we're in a beautiful downward trend and we're not being data driven, like, that's a choice. So my encouragement to you today is, it always comes back to being and having choice and to make empowered decisions, to choose to be a victor. But in terms of thinking like a winner and how winners think differently, winners are positive, optimistic people. And no matter what you are going through, and this is where the hero part comes in, no matter how hard and stressful and difficult your situation is, no matter how tough it is for you to reach that goal, you can choose to be positive and optimistic about how you get there, which is going to make it so much more likely. I'm going to say inevitable, that if you cultivate this, inevitable that you will get there. And that's pretty encouraging. All right, I'm going to leave this here and I will see you next week for another episode. If you like this episode, if you find it helpful, if you've been challenged in any way and you think that you know of someone or that there's someone in the world that would benefit from listening to this kind of information, becoming a more empowered person, then please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps the podcast get out to more people, for people to know that it is a good podcast to listen to. It's the reason that I will not watch movies that have under like a 60% rating, because I trust reviews from a whole lot of people. So when you do that, it helps do the same for this podcast. It's a simple way to give back. I do not do ads. I keep this a very ads-free space for that reason. So that's a way that you can give back to this, I think, pretty darn cool free content. And if you didn't like it, then please don't. Only if it's valuable to you. All right. And I'll see you next week for another episode. All right. And like I've said, all right, a million times. Bye.